Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the IAM studios right here in the heart of LA. And this episode is brought to you by my good friends at Culver City Toyota. I'm serious. Really, really good people and a great dealership. Let me tell you something. I go over there probably once a month, maybe a little more. It's absolutely not like most car dealerships. It's a place to like hang out. It's fun. It's inviting. It's welcoming. It's clean. It has areas to chill, free Wi-Fi, coffee, stuff like that. Floor to ceiling windows. But all the people there are nice and friendly. It's not like a typical dealership. And listen, whether you're going there to get a new car or a pre-owned car, Culver City Toyota is the place to be. And George, the general manager, is the dude who goes that extra mile, especially on the pre-owned. They want you to buy with confidence. Every Culver City Toyota certified pre-owned vehicle passes a 118-point inspection. Think about that. 118 checkbox to make sure that car is up to your standard. And it comes with a comprehensive limited warranty, roadside assistance, and additional perks. So head to Culver City Toyota right there on Washington Boulevard, and everybody there will be able to take care of you and even just chill and give you a smile. But if you ask for George, he's going to make sure that you have a sweet ride when you hit the road. And that's what we're doing this episode. We're hitting the road because it's road trip time, baby. Right back to my second favorite place in the world, LA's backyard. You know what I'm talking about. Vegas, baby. But this is not simply another episode to extol my love for my second home, the place where I grew up when I wasn't in LA. No, there was a major announcement this week that signified the end of an era, what I called the modern era of Vegas. And I think it's appropriate, seeing as how Vegas has absolutely come of age, entered its next phase, and grown into an actual metropolis, not just a playground to gamble and have fun. So for today, we're going to talk about that major announcement, what it means for Las Vegas, and what it means for LA. This is the end of an era in LA's backyard. All right, y'all, let's get into it. So we start with something that happened in LA this week. The announcement hit all the wires. People's eyebrows were raised. The Mirage Casino in Las Vegas announced that it will be closing its doors officially on July 17th. That's a huge deal for Las Vegas, but also for LA, because again, the reason I call Vegas LA's backyard is more than 4.8 million people in LA County visit Vegas in any given year. And more than 270,000 people have moved from LA to Vegas since 2019. My wife's cousin, my wife's friend, my CPA, I'm sure you know somebody who's moved to Vegas because it's the place to be. And we did an episode on this, how Vegas might be the next LA. But you know why that growth, that astronomical growth, took off in the last 30 years? Because of the Mirage. I'm serious. The impact that the Mirage had on Vegas was like no other hotel since the Flamingo in 1946. And that's the hotel that kicked off the Strip. And that's when Vegas became, well, Vegas. And it was also a big deal for me personally, because I was at opening weekend of the Mirage in 1989. Remember, my dad was a boxing manager, so we were going to Vegas every month, taking road trips up Death Trap Highway in his Nissan 300ZX T-top. But I remember the Mirage opening weekend. I got to see firsthand this mega resort, the first true ultra-luxury hotel that spawned a new era. An era that saw the population of Vegas explode. And quite frankly, life in that city was never the same. And by the way, I met Mike Tyson that weekend. It's one of my favorite pictures of all time. I'm gonna post that, obviously. But here's why Vegas was never the same. The Mirage literally changed the way in which hotels in Vegas were designed, changed the way they were presented to the public. And it changed what being in a Vegas resort meant. It changed the city forever. And you got to remember, the 1980s, and this is almost crazy to think about in retrospect, but the 1980s were a rough time for Vegas. Again, it's if you see even a slow day in Vegas, I follow some feeds, Las Vegas locally, Vintage Las Vegas. They do great, great, great work. And one of them posted recently like a slow day in a casino in Vegas. And it's almost weird now because Vegas is bumping every day of the year. But in the 1980s, Vegas tourism was on the decline, especially following New Jersey's legalization of gambling in Atlantic City. And that really tilted the scales, especially for folks on the East Coast. I mean, think about this. Before the Mirage, there hadn't been a new resort built in Vegas since 1973. Las Vegas was stalled out for 16 years. That's an entire generation. And what didn't help things either was the fact that there was a tragic fire in 1980 in the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino, the original one. And that resulted in 85 deaths and 700 injuries. And it just cast a pall over Vegas. It was kind of an appropriate way to start that decade of struggle because Vegas just wasn't really Vegas. And now, don't get me wrong. Caesar's Palace, Dunes, Stardust, Tropicana, those are still stalwarts. And they carried title fights when boxing was king. And they brought people out to play in the desert. But it didn't have the same pizzazz, the buzz. There was no Sinatra, no rap. I mean, they were, but they were on there. They were running on fumes. No Elvis. And revenue was down. Interest was down. Globally, people weren't going from Paris to Vegas. People weren't going from Europe to Vegas. Even Atlantic City was the new shiny object. But all that changed on November 22nd, 1989. With the opening of the first mega resort, the first hotel that was not dependent on its casino, the property that paved the way for the new and modern era of Vegas, the Mirage. But before we even jump into the Mirage proper, you got to understand there's a little bit of magic to where the Mirage is. It was, well, is still for a couple months, Mirage's location. The Mirage is on property of what was once a nightclub called the Red Rooster that opened in 1930, before the Strip was even the Strip. But that magic is that the Red Rooster was the first business on Las Vegas Boulevard to receive a gaming license. Think about that. That's some auspicious history right there. Because, you know, you get the first gaming license on the Strip in 1930 before it's the Strip. That's some good luck, I think. Now, the Red Rooster lasted 17 years, and it became the Grace Hayes Lodge, which was owned by an actress named Grace Hayes. But that was the second location of the Grace Hayes Lodge. Listen to this. The first one, that's right, San Fernando Valley, baby, Studio City. As always, the LA-Vegas connection is ever-present. But the Grace Hayes Lodge eventually became the Castaways, which was purchased by Steve Wynn in 1986. Who planted the seeds for something very big, or had his seeds already planted for something very big. Now, Wynn was already the owner of the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City, and he sold that because he had these plans, these huge plans for what was the Castaways in his property. He wanted to build a new hotel that was unlike anything the world had ever seen. He wouldn't tell anybody what that meant yet, but he had a vision. And he was going to call this project Bombay. Or the Bombay Club, neither of which passed muster with the people in his inner sanctum, in his inner circle. So he said, maybe I'm just going to call it the Wynn. That would come a couple decades later, but people didn't like that at the time. Vegas wasn't ready for that. So those were rejected. And by June of 1987, he settled on a new name. This is it. It's going to be called the Golden Nugget, just like the other Golden Nugget in downtown Vegas. Except this one was going to be tropical themed, South Seas, if you will. And even with that Golden Nugget in downtown Vegas, he figured people would know this one as the new Golden Nugget and the other one as the old Golden Nugget. Kind of interesting for that big of an investment. But he did have plans to eventually rename it to match the theme. So only took about a year and construction started. December 1988, project was in full swing. And he had the vision again. Found the perfect name to emphasize the resort as an oasis in the Nevada desert. The Mirage. Perfect, right? I mean, now, again, we know the Mirage, but come on. What symbolizes a desert better than a Mirage, right? Like, beaming this gold-windowed hotel, high-rise. And that model, right? Like, it's not shaped like other hotels. This is something completely different. So it was the Mirage. But the thing was, there were already two businesses, two Mirages in Las Vegas. There was a La Mirage Casino and the Mirage Motel. So what did Wynn do? He paid them each $250,000 for the rights to the name, and the project and the name were full steam ahead. So let's put into context what I mean by new era Vegas with the Mirage. The Mirage cost $630 million to construct. That was big time money. And that was Wall Street money. The first time that ever happened in Vegas. Again, we're coming right fresh off the mafia era. Wall Street was investing in Vegas, giving it its first veneer of, let's say, corporate credibility. Michael Milken, Drexel Burnham Lambert, junk bonds, the whole 80s go-go deal, right? And that price tag made it the most expensive hotel ever built in world history. So when I say new era, I mean new era, but we're not even at the details yet. He also hired 6,400 employees, an astounding number for any business that just got off the ground, but a mind-boggling workforce for a new hotel. And Wynn himself, he was laser-focused on secrecy. He refused to allow media inside the property, would not release images. He wanted to keep this entire vision a surprise for the grand opening. I mean, again, that in itself, we're talking 1989. This is stuff people weren't doing, okay? And nobody was even building in Vegas. So to be the dude dropping half a bill on the most expensive hotel ever built and not even giving a sneak peek to everybody, that takes some cojones, right? So, November 22nd, 1989, at the stroke of midnight, the Mirage opened to major fanfare. I remember it that weekend, and it was nuts. I was 10 at the time, and I still have very vivid memories. But if you see these pictures of the actual grand opening, it's outrageous. We're talking the huge New Year's-style crowds lined up to see this hotel. And by the way, New Year's in Vegas was not what we think of now in 1989. Again, that's something that the Mirage ushered in. That wasn't the strip packed and blocked off yet. No, that was just New York. But we'll get to that. But this crowd lined up to see this hotel that was unlike anything else. And they also lined up to see the volcano in front of the hotel. Now, today, it's quaint and it's cute. Oh, volcano, who cares? No, this was a big deal, man. A huge erupting artificial volcano providing free entertainment to pedestrians in front of the resort and drawing people. Think about that. Where's that idea even coming from? Have a volcano in front of the resort. But it wasn't just about the volcano. The Mirage went full bore on what were called, quote unquote, non-traditional features for Vegas, especially for a gaming property. But Wynn wanted these to be primary attractions. He literally tilted Vegas on its axis. He said the Mirage was not going to be dependent on its casino like every other hotel. It turned out this idea was brilliant. We're talking a dolphin habitat, a lush, vibrant jungle display, a domed atrium, a humongous fish tank that would distract guests while they were waiting for the check-in. Not distract, attract guests while they were waiting in the check-in line. This fish tank, I remember every single tropical fish you could dream of. It was like, seemed to be the entire length of the lobby. It was the entire length of the lobby. There was a magic show, Siegfried and Roy, white tigers. The best arcade in Vegas. Apologies to Circus, but that thing was awesome. And I got to meet Dr. J and hung out with Dr. J's son at that arcade. There was a first-rate ice cream parlor, which again, sounds very pedestrian now. Every hotel, the Paris, the Venetian, they all got ice cream. But as a kid, as a family in 1989, this was above and beyond the scope of anything seen anywhere, especially in Vegas, which was casinos and shrimp cocktails and 99-cent foot-long hot dogs and all-you-could-eat buffets. This was somehow both upscale and accessible and incredibly fun. And I didn't even talk about the casino. So the focus was not on the gambling, and the smart people predicted financial ruin. Analysts, gaming executives. Somewhere along the line, they noted that the Mirage needed to make $1 million per day just to cover its expenses, just to pay the bills. How on earth were they going to do that without even focusing on gambling? Well, as a sign of good luck, within hours of the opening, a casino customer hit a $4.6 million jackpot on a $1 slot machine. And now that harkens back to the Red Rooster in the first gaming license, I'm telling you. And from there, it was on. The property exceeded all expectations. It ushered in an era of unprecedented growth for the Strip and for Las Vegas. I'm talking Luxor, Excalibur, Mandalay Bay, Aladdin, all resulted because of the Mirage. Bellagio, Treasure Island, the new MGM Grand, Stratosphere, Monte Carlo, New York, Venetian, Paris. I can't emphasize this enough. You went from a city that hadn't seen a new resort on the Strip in 16 years to a dozen mega resorts that are still around today, except for the Aladdin and Monte Carlo, RIP. But all came in right after the Mirage because the Mirage completely changed Las Vegas. Tourists flocked. People from LA made this their second home, in many cases their first home. And Vegas was not just back. But for the first time, Vegas was becoming a real city in the eyes of the world. And one hotel that I didn't even mention that came in as a result of Mirage was the Hard Rock Hotel. That itself changed Vegas because of the pool parties and the day clubs, the Joint, Body English, Rehab. That's when Vegas became the premier nightlife and entertainment destination for a completely different demographic. I'm not talking about shows and concerts and events. I'm talking about partying. And again, it seems so second nature now because that's what Vegas is. Actually, that's a little bit on the way out, but that's what Vegas was in the first couple decades of the 21st century. And that's because of the Hard Rock Hotel. And to tie that in a neat bow, the Hard Rock Hotel is actually the reason why the Mirage is closing its doors.
Mm-hmm.
What? Well, though the Mirage had innovated, renovated, spent billions of dollars improving the property, became a little musty. It's a little on the old side. I go to Vegas a few times a year still. And the last couple times I stepped in the Mirage, it's like you got those memories, but there's only so far you can go with volcanoes and fish tanks and tropical trees. So at a certain point, Steve Wynn left the resort. MGM Grand bought it. And by 2019, Hard Rock Hotel, which had actually sold and rebranded their hotel in Vegas, made overtures to buy the Mirage. By December 2021, Hard Rock agreed to purchase the Mirage's operations from MGM Resorts for a little bit more than $1 billion. And under the deal, Hard Rock would lease the property and rebrand the Mirage as the Hard Rock Las Vegas. And though they'd keep MGM, by the way, kept the Mirage name and licensed it to Hard Rock for 3 years, until the rebranding took effect, which is where we are today, the Mirage's final day in business is going to be July 17th. So after 35 years, this landmark strip resort is shutting down and will be remade as the Hard Rock Las Vegas by spring of 2027. So set your calendars because it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a very big deal. Now, is it going to have the impact that the Mirage had? Probably not. I don't think you're going to see that anytime soon, especially with the direction Vegas is going, focusing on so many industries outside of gambling and resort life, though that's always going to be at its heart. But it's going to be a full shutdown and reopening, not phased in, not in steps, not in stages. And plans are still in the rendering stage, but it's going to include at least 25 restaurants and a 5,000-seat theater. And the signature design of this new Hard Rock to replace the volcano is a nearly 700-foot hotel tower shaped as back-to-back guitars. Now, Hard Rock already has one of those in their Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. And by the way, Hard Rock is owned by the Seminole Tribe in Florida, so they got a lot of money and resources, and I just learned that today doing that research, which I find very interesting. But there's going to be floor-to-ceiling glass, beautiful structure, reflective windows. And again, they decided to turf the volcano because why does Vegas need an artificial volcano that opened 35 years ago? Again, quaint now, gone in the future, city of tomorrow. And now the new resort, the Hard Rock, is going to double the number of jobs at the property. In the meantime, there's going to be 2,500 construction jobs. Unions are even supportive of it despite, you know, laying off people that are out. But they're paying $80 million in severance packages for employees who remain during the renovation. But what's interesting is this is the second time this year that a strip casino shuts down. The Tropicana closed in April after 67 years to make room for a baseball stadium for the Oakland A's, soon to be Las Vegas A's, which, by the way, in my mind, substantiated the fact that Vegas is not just a vacation city, not just a resort and gambling town, but again, a real metropolis. One that's astronomical growth mirrored that of our own city of Los Angeles only a century later. And much of that is due to the Mirage, which is truly an oasis on a once moribund strip that reinvigorated a town and made it into a city. So get there while you can to say your goodbyes. You have 2 months, because after that, it's truly the end of an era in LA's backyard. So thank you for listening to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett. I love LA, but boy, do I love Vegas. And based on the feedback of previous episodes on Vegas, you do too. So I hope you enjoyed this one. And if you did, leave a 5-star rating on whatever platform you use. If you're really feeling it, please leave a review. It is wildly helpful with the algorithm. And the most recent review gets to be featured on the Apple Podcast platform. So you get your name in lights for a little bit too. And if you really, really loved it, share it with a friend that loves LA or a friend that loves Vegas. Because that's what helps the most for our show. And don't forget, Vegas is LA's backyard. So get out there and enjoy it. And I appreciate you listening. I wish you a fantastic day, night, week, and weekend, wherever you are. All right, y'all. It's been a minute.